This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening on this rainy Monday afternoon or evening. On Queer Voices tonight, we're going to have Tim Brookover, who's going to talk about Outsmart and what's going on there. Then Sally Huffer is going to update us on the programs at Montrose Counseling Center and regarding the following of the Futures Conference. Nancy Ford is going to be talking about What a World, What a World. And it's been What a World for her, I guess, recently. And then Army Specialist Tom Cook and Kathy Westcott of the Service Members Legal Defense Network will be here talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. All that's coming up on Queer Voices, but first, we go to London and the BBC World News.
BBC News with Lady Goga. The United Nations and the World Bank say they're hoping to raise more than $1 billion to fight bird flu at an international donors conference in Beijing. Representatives from nearly 90 countries are attending the meeting, which has been organized by the World Bank, China and the European Union. Here's Shirley Gordon.
Bird flu has killed at least 79 people since 2003. The big fear is that the virus could mutate and move from human to human. The World Bank says the two-day Beijing conference is aimed at raising up to $1.5 billion to help countries tackle the disease and prepare for a possible pandemic. Nearly half of the funds would be targeted at Southeast Asia, where the disease is already endemic. Some money would also be used for the global stockpiling of antiviral drugs. The European Union's promised $100 million. Now the World Bank wants firm commitments from individual countries.
The permanent members of the United Nations Security Council have been considering how to deal with Iran's nuclear activities, but their meeting in London ended without any clear statement of action. Officials from Europe, the United States, Russia and China spend the day looking for agreement on a way forward. Britain said a meeting of the United Nations Nuclear Agency would be called early in February. President Putin has described his position on Iran's nuclear program as very close to that of European countries and the United States. Speaking in Moscow after talks with the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, Mr. Putin emphasized the importance of caution in trying to resolve the impasse. He said the problem centered on uranium enrichment and that Moscow's proposal that Tehran should carry out this process on Russian territory had not been ruled out by Iran. You're listening to the news from the BBC. Lawyers in the American state of California have failed in their attempts to stop an execution in a few hours' time of an elderly man. Clarence Ray Allen is on death row for ordering the murder of three people in 1980. James Westhead reports from Washington.
Clarence Ray Allen was sentenced to death 23 years ago. Already jailed for murder, he ordered the killing from his prison cell of three witnesses who testified against him. But now, aged 76, Allen is blind, partially deaf, and confined to a wheelchair. He argued that his frailty meant the death penalty in his case amounted to cruel and unusual punishment. But the courts and the Californian governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, disagreed, clearing the way for his execution by lethal injection.
AIDS activists in Nigeria have raised doubts about the government's latest plans to fight the pandemic. In December, the Nigerian government announced it would provide all antiretroviral drugs free of charge within 2 weeks. But it now appears that far fewer people will get free antiretrovirals than was first thought. Our Africa editor Martin Plout reports.
Antiretroviral drugs have always been given to patients free. The problem has been the service charges made by the hospitals for treating the patients. Before December's announcement, this was around $8 in federal hospitals, but even more in hospitals run by the individual states. AID activists have now told the BBC that charges have been dropped in 24 federal hospitals, but not in the far more numerous state-run hospitals. This figure is disputed by the government, which maintains that 41 hospitals and clinics are now providing the drugs free of charge.
The Austrian government has failed to hang on to five paintings by Gustav Klimt that were looted during the Second World War. A court ordered the return of the paintings worth more than $100 million to the heir of the Jewish family that originally owned them. The heir, 89-year-old Maria Altman, said she was thrilled at the court's decision. Bethany Bell reports from Vienna.
The paintings include one of Klimt's most famous works, a portrait of Mrs. Altman's aunt, Adele Bloch-Bauer. When Adele died in 1925, she left a will requesting her husband, Ferdinand Bloch-Bauer, to leave the artworks to the Austrian gallery upon his death. But when the Nazis took over Austria in 1938, Mr. Bloch-Bauer and his niece were forced to flee for their lives. The paintings were seized and put on display in a Vienna museum, where they remain to this day.
The president-elect of Chile, Michelle Bachelet, has promised to guarantee the same rights and opportunities to everybody in the country. At her first news conference since her victory on Sunday, Chile's first female leader also said that her cabinet would be composed of an equal number of women and men. Dr. Bachelet's election has been praised by the United States, which said it showed the Chilean people's strong commitment to democracy. Dr. Bachelet will lead the center-left coalition, which has been in office for the past 16 years. BBC News.
This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Polinsky.
And J.D. Doyle.
And Jennifer Renee.
Greg Chapman.
Deborah Bell.
Glenn Holt.
And John B.
So, we're all here tonight.
Yeah, amazing. We trudged to the rain and the sleet and the snow and the dark of night.
Well, under full disclosure, and the reason why I wasn't here last week is that I am employed by the Pride Committee, Pride Houston, and they schedule the board meetings on Monday nights. So, I need to be there.
That was just so intelligent of them.
Well,
we had nothing to do with them picking that night.
And it's under full disclosure, unlike the president of the United States, you know.
Yes, well, I'm also on the board of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, so under full disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think what else?
Well, we've been there, done that. Yeah. I mean, I'm all part of that.
Got the T-shirt.
Yeah, absolutely. Tonight we have a number of things going on. First of all, it's raining. Isn't that unusual in Houston?
Well, it's about time we needed it.
We do need it.
Even though it is my birthday, and it's pleasant for it just to be a little rain and not freezing cold like it often is on my birthday.
A little
birthday.
Up in this winter.
Yeah, and I survived my chocolate extravaganza on Friday.
That was wonderful.
Yes, Jennifer and J.D. and Glenn were there, and Christy Claxton put on a wonderful performance, and we had a chocolate fountain. That was a lot of fun. So
right.
we had great music.
You're
and
not supposed to get in the fountain, Deborah.
Oh, they didn't tell me that part. Okay.
It was fun. It really was.
Yeah.
So you're 26?
I'm 56.
Well, good for you. Good for you. I'm not far behind.
I know, because you just had your birthday on the 11th.
Yes.
Happy birthday, Jack.
Well, thank you. And no singing, especially
not you or I.
Right.
Happy birthday to us all.
Well, on tonight's show, we have Tim Brookover, who's going to be talking about Outsmart and the things that are going on at the community center, because he's involved in that. And they have an event coming up this weekend.
Yeah, Queer Bingo.
At
whatever that means.
Yes.
He can tell us, yeah.
It's at 1415 California. It's Saturday night. Also coming up this week, if I could sneak in a little plug here, on Thursday evening between 6 and 9 p.m., same building, 1415 California, but on the first floor, Pride Houston is having an open house of our newly renovated office space and expanded office space, and it's basically an open house with some food and some drink, and that open house is for volunteers and people who just want to know a little bit more about Pride. Okay, off my soapbox here. The next segment, we're going to be talking to Sally Huffer, who's going to be updating us on the Montrose Counseling Center and regarding the Futures Conference, which I'm interested in. And in the second hour, Nancy Ford's going to join us, and she's going to be doing What a World, What a World, and some other stuff. We'll be talking to her about some recent changes in her life. And then, this sounds like a great segment, Deborah.
Yes, Army Specialist Tommy Cook, who is involved in a lawsuit challenging the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy with the Service Members Legal Defense Network, will be here. He was recently featured in the Houston Press, and we're going to talk to him about his story and about that policy and how detrimental and horrible it is, considering that we have people, you know, working and to serve this country, and some who are being injured and dying, and yet we have this horrible
right.
It's not that any of them should be there, in my opinion.
Right, right. It's sort of unequal and separate.
Exactly.
So all that's coming up, but we got some music first.
Something that I never said, a story that I've never shared. I was only 20 years old, he was a love affair. Soon became a humble home, wrecked with animosity. Took it to the bottom, and then turned around and took it out on me. And I was just a boy, a scrawny little boy, a naive, faggot little boy. Life has been so good to me, taught me things about the soul. Pain is just an error in thought that I'm in full control. Glad I started long ago, learning in the hardest way. Now I know my power.
And that was a little bit of Levi Christ with the song Man Out of Me from One of the Ones. The reason why I wanted to play that this week is because next week on QMH, the last half of the show is an interview with Levi Christ, and it's one of the most fun interviews I've had in quite a while. He's been through quite a lot. It has sad parts, it has funny parts. It is a good interview.
This is Queer Voices.
Tim Brookover is with us, and Tim Brookover is with Outsmart. He's the editor. And Tim Brookover is also affiliated with the Community Center. Well, let's talk a little bit about Outsmart. What's going on over there?
Hi, Jack. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Well, we just published one darn issue after another.
Yes.
We're starting off 2006. This issue, if you haven't read it already, I hope you'll go pick it up because it includes, among other things, the wonderful year-long astrology forecast by Lily Roddy, our regular astrologer who just does a fantastic job on a monthly basis. But every January she looks at the entire year and tells us what we can expect according to the stars and the planets, and it's a lot of fun, and I know a lot of people really look forward to it. In fact, I've already gotten a response from a reader in New York who reads it every year online, at least since we've been online, and just sent me a note with just three words: Lily Roddy rocks.
How much of the issue is online each month?
Almost the entire issue is online. Nearly all of the words are online.
Mm-hmm. The text.
All the text. But I think almost everything, except for the ads. The ads are not online, except for those advertisers that choose to be online. Not all of the visuals are online. We're not quite to the point where we have sort of page per page replication of layouts and images.
How much of an archive do you keep?
I think we're back to 1990. late 90s.
Well, that's pretty good.
So it's not the entire 10 years, not 11 years of the magazine, but most of it.
I'm waiting for the DVD would come out like
right.
The New Yorker.
Yeah.
Actually, that's pretty neat.
Yeah,
that's really neat, though. If you don't know, the entire New Yorker is on DVD, and I think they were selling it for like $100 or something at the, although I understand.
How many years does it span?
The entire
one.
Yes, they archived it back
since
to.
And I presume it's searchable.
I understand it is, although some people, I guess, actually wanted to load it on their computer and they couldn't. You just have to go out and you do the DVD stuff.
We'll get our night crew working.
Yes,
that lazy night crew.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's interesting. So what are some of the things that you're looking towards as the year goes on? And, you know, we certainly, the community's been in a little bit of, with the loss of the referendum.
Sure.
And, you know, some healing from that and trying to move forward.
Well, one of the things that we're really looking toward in 2006, and will be reflected a little bit in the upcoming February issue, and I think has been over the last couple issues, is increased political coverage. The Outsmart has always done some of that, but I think we've certainly increased a bit in the last year, and I think we'll do a little bit more, particularly as we look toward the 2006 elections, which of course is not only a gubernatorial election, but elections for other elected officials, including some people who we would love to see out of office in the community, and some people who we have a good chance of sending on their way this year. So I think we'll see some more coverage, interviews with some of the people who are running for office. I'm also planning some interviews with the new city council members who were endorsed by the caucus this year, and our friends of the community, Sue Lovell, of course, Ann Clutterbuck, and others, and check in with those. So I think you'll see a little bit more of that. And we've gotten some very good response.
Is it a bigger challenge covering politics since you're a monthly?
Yes, it is, because it changes so quickly. And, you know, particularly with, that was an issue with some of the, with the city elections. Because we couldn't cover them in the same way that, let's say, The Voice could, or certainly The Chronicle, because we're, you know, even though we work pretty close to the bone for a monthly.
Well, the whole purpose, I guess, in the magazine is more thoughtful, longer
analysis.
Yeah, and hopefully we can do some of that.
Interviews.
And actually, I'm planning a story, and I don't know, I know this won't be in February, and I'm not sure when it'll be coming up in the next few months. Because it's going to take some time, but I want to do an analysis of how Sue Lovell won.
Well, and I find that really interesting too. And actually, I talked a little bit to Grant yesterday with some other people, Grant Martin, who ran her campaign, and it is really interesting. And actually, he doesn't even know yet because he didn't go through it all. And that's a problem with politics. You finish one and you're on to the next one so quickly. But it is rather interesting, and I think the fact that yes, we lost the referendum pretty badly, but Sue Lovell won, and Ann Clutterbuck won,
and handily.
And she was gay. Baited, no less. A number of other people did win on the endorsement card, but all of that was work that, and of course, full disclosure, working, you know, being part of the caucus, is that it was a caucus working together with No Nonsense and HERA, Houston Equal Rights Alliance, and that fact that they were signing up people to be registered to vote, they got that information and then were able to contact them and try to get them out to vote. And it's interesting. I mean, they were even doing text messaging on Election Day because there was only 4% turnoff in the December runoff to get people out there and vote because, you know, people are bombarded with so many different messages each day to try to remember to go out and vote all the time. And it's going to be interesting now that we moved into 2006 with some elections. It's going to be real interesting with the Alan Cohen / Martha Wong race. Herbert Vo out in the west side is another one that's going to be interesting.
Well, and actually, when I went to the last caucus meeting, the monthly meeting, which was the first week in January, and I really went to hear Ellen speak and didn't realize that Sue was going to be there, and she spoke and was talking about how she won. And as she was talking, I thought, I'm really glad I came to this meeting because this is a really good idea. And then Ellen got up, and one of the first things she said was, Sue, we're running our campaign based on your campaign.
Well, and that is, you know, Sue was outspent. Mm-hmm. Which is pretty incredible. She came out number one in the November, but not with enough to not run without a runoff. But a lot of it is simple, basic politics where you go knocking on the door, you identify the voters,
right.
You get them out to vote.
Well, one of the magazine staff told me, actually, right after the runoff, that she had gone and voted in the morning. She's somewhere in one of the Heights precincts. And sometime in the afternoon, someone from the Sue Lovell campaign, or affiliated with the campaign, came to her door, didn't call her on the phone, didn't email her, came to the door and said, have you voted for Sue? Not have you voted, have you voted for Sue? And if you haven't, can I help you? Do you need help getting to the polls?
Well,
and I thought that was
right.
That's ground
and different
level
times mean different strategies. I mean, the old days where you used to stand out in front of the polls, which we still do a lot, and do the card pushing. Now on that December runoff, it wasn't so much of pushing cards when people got there, because in many cases there was only one race to vote for.
Mm-hmm.
It was getting those people out
mm-hmm.
to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And just like we're looking at some of these things that aren't in the Montrose in the next election cycle, maybe it isn't the best thing to go, pushing cards in front of those precincts. It's just calling them up. And, you know, we're learning some of the technology that the other side has been using.
I was just thinking the same thing. You know, the right is brilliant at that, and you got to get your voters out.
So what are some of the other things you want to focus on this year?
Well, I think we always get a great response when we really focus on people in the community and what they're doing, profiles of people. We'd like to do more. It's always, you know, an issue, as I'm sure it is with The Voice and other publications, of space. You can only do so much, but there are so many people doing interesting things, and I hope to highlight, as the year goes on, even more of those people. Some of them, will be people who are well-known, as Sue was when she ran for council. People knew about her. But one of the things we can do as a magazine is then come in later and, I hope, introduce people who are doing interesting things and sometimes extremely active, but maybe they don't get the attention that those of us get who've been around for a while.
You did some of that last year with a lot of college-age kids, and that was very good.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm finding, it started last year, trying to round up some of the college, I say kids, they probably don't like that, but the people involved with college groups, trying to set up some stuff, and their schedule is even crazier than our schedules are, and hasn't quite worked out yet, but I'm hoping before the end of the school year to get some attention to some of those young people.
Well, and
because they're impressive.
A lot of those people involved in Hair and the No Nonsense were younger
Absolutely.
People, which was just great. They were out there doing the block walking and getting involved and organizing their precinct.
Yeah, that's exactly what we need, because, you know,
they're out there. They're the future.
They be the future. And a lot of them, they're very enthusiastic, and like people of all ages, they're waiting to be asked, and asked in the right way, and you know, matching up the right people with the right job or right task and the right organization. You know, every organization isn't right for everybody. That was one of that's something that I found very exciting about HERA, and I did about the No Nonsense effort, at least the local people I knew, Emily Langdon and some of those other younger people. I just thought that was very exciting, and it was very exciting to go over to the community center and see them there, either just, you know, obviously working diligently most of the time, but or just hanging out and with some of their younger friends. This is great. People younger than me.
Switching hats here, let's talk about the community center. What's happening there?
Well, we are really busy these days and very excited, and you had mentioned earlier our big event that we're working on now, which is coming up Saturday, Queer Bingo, which we launched in December. The one this Saturday is our second one. It's very exciting. It's actually a Texas Lottery Commission sanctioned bingo, so this is serious bingo. It's official. We had to start way back last spring, and Christopher Bound, who's the president of the center, worked diligently on paperwork and more paperwork and even more paperwork. They finally approved us, and we had to start in December, which was a little crazy because it was December. But it worked, and it was great fun, and we had a very good turnout, and even made a little money. So we're very excited about it. Dallas, the Dallas Community Center and other community centers have been doing it for a number of years. Dallas for about 4 years, and have been extremely successful. And they've been very gracious helping us out. Even a couple of guys from Dallas have come down, and they observed in December, and they've come down a couple other times and chatted with us, and or really with Christopher. And so it's a just a night of bingo.
Who's your MC?
Chanel Cartier, who is the Imperial Court of Houston Empress.
Sounds like it's entertainment also.
She is so funny. She's just great. She and Christopher...
Drag Queen Bingo.
Drag Queen Bingo. Christopher, I know, you can't beat it. Christopher calls the numbers. Chanel is like, you know, the color gal, and very funny. And we just have a great time. And every month we have a theme. And this month the theme is Broadway Bingo. So expect lots of show tunes and singing. And we always, in addition to the cash prizes that people can win by winning bingo, we give away a lot of door prizes during the evening. And this month we're going to give away a lot of theater tickets. We have theater tickets from SPA, from Theater Under the Stars, from Theater New West, from The Alley. And are still working on getting some other surprises, so that's a lot of fun.
So, and that is on the third Saturday of every month.
It's the third Saturday of every month. Doors open at 5, bingo starts at 6. But a lot of people, we're all learning, a lot of people like to show up early because they can get their cards and set it all up and, you know, do the dauber thing.
These are serious folks.
Yeah, well, serious bingo.
Getting GLBT people to show up early, that's interesting.
You know, we actually had people show up because we said doors open at 5. We thought, nobody's going to show up. But 5 o'clock, those bingo folks, they know.
So what else is going on at the community center? Now, the community center is located at
3400 Montrose at Hawthorne. We're at Suite 207 on the second floor. That's the Sky Bar building, or for those of us who've been around for a while, it's the old Cody's building.
Next to Kroger.
Next to Disco Kroger, yeah, exactly. Bingo is the third Saturday of the month. That's a great event. We also have coming up, I mentioned Theater New West earlier. Joe Watts, who is the artistic director of Theater New West, has a new production coming up of Women Behind Bars, which some may know about. It's Tom Ewan's camp classic spoof on women's prison movies.
I think Divine was in one of the productions.
Absolutely.
So that gives you a clue.
Yeah, you got the picture. So he's doing that. The production actually opens February 10th and runs for 5 weekends at Resurrection, which is an after-hours club on West Gray. But on February 8th, he is going to have a preview performance at Rich's on San Jacinto. And that's all proceeds will benefit the community center. So we're very excited about
that.
Now,
what are the hours of the community center?
We're an all-volunteer organization, so we're not open all day and all night as we would like to be. But we have public hours in the evening, 6 to 9. And then hours on the weekends as we can get volunteers. And then we're open any time there's an event. We have a lot of different events, whether there are events or that events that other organizations have. And whenever there's an event, we're open. So, and these days, actually, we've been fortunate during the political campaign, and even now, because HERA office is there, Houston Equal Rights Alliance, they're there almost all the time, so they keep the center open, even if there's not anything going on, so people can even come in and get information, or pick up The Voice, or Outsmart, or we get The Advocate, or other publications, or community information.
Okay, so the community center is at 3400 Montrose on the second floor, mm-hmm. And this weekend there is the bingo, which is happening at 1415 California upstairs, and Outsmart is available all throughout Montrose.
All over, and it's also online at OutsmartMagazine.com.
And you're listening, that was Tim Brookover, who's editor of Outsmart Magazine and involved on the board of the Houston GLBT Community Center. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Welcome. to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A crackdown in India raises human rights and HIV concerns. Queer couples move toward equality in the UK and New Jersey. And an innuendo-armed collector reveals even more that...
stranger than straight.
All that and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending January 14th, 2006. India's government is feeling renewed pressure from human rights groups and the United Nations over its colonial-era sodomy laws. It comes on the heels of increasing harassment and arrests of gay men there, particularly in the Lucknow region. The UN's major HIV/AIDS body also expressed concerns that the anti-gay law and the heightened crackdown hamper HIV/AIDS prevention efforts in India, one of the world's most populous nations. In early January, Lucknow police arrested four men on charges of operating a gay racket on the internet, as well as of engaging in unnatural sex. Reports published by Human Rights Watch suggest that undercover police posing as gay on the website entrapped one man, then forced him to call the others and arrange a meeting at a local park where they were all arrested. Other reports indicate that gay clubs and bars are being shut down across the country. UNAIDS issued a statement this week that said, in part, in India, criminalization of people most at risk of HIV infection may increase stigma and discrimination, ultimately fueling the AIDS epidemic. Scott Long, director of Human Rights Watch's Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Rights Program, said the Lucknow region, where the men were arrested, has seen a number of anti-gay attacks in recent years. Lucknow police have a shameful record of harassing gay men as well as non-governmental organizations that work with them, Long said. They are able to do so because India's government clings to the criminalization of homosexual conduct.
Anti-queer violence is unusually common in Jamaica, which, like India, holds on to its colonial-era sodomy law. In the latest incident, Jamaican gay man Nokia Cowan drowned after jumping into Kingston Harbor while being chased by gay bashers, according to the Jamaica Forum for Lesbians, All Sexuals, and Gays, the country's best-known queer advocacy group. In an attempt to flee this mob, the young man jumped into the Kingston Harbor and perished because he could not swim, the organization said. JFLAG condemns the prevalence of incidents such as this, their statement continued, and we implore the highest members of government to clearly indicate that violence based on sexual orientation, both perceived and actual, is unacceptable in Jamaica. That plea has fallen on deaf ears for a number of years. Leading AIDS activist Steve Harvey was murdered in Kingston on November 30th when, according to police, at least four assailants forced their way into his home and abducted him in his Jamaica AIDS support company car. His body was found in a rural area with gunshot wounds to the back and head. Activists in Jamaica and elsewhere also have been fighting a years-long battle with several famous dancehall reggae singers, whose lyrics, activists say, support anti-gay violence or, in some instances, the killing of homosexuals. Among those targeted by protests have been Elephant Man, Vibes Cartel, Beanie Man, Buju Banton, T.O.K., Bounty Killer, Capleton, and Sizzla.
Australia's government is feeling heat for refusing to certify its overseas gay citizens' single status, a routine part of marriage applications by foreigners in most other countries, including those where same-gender marriage is legal. The Australian embassy in Vienna refused the certificate confirming his single status to Peter Kokoschka, originally from Melbourne, Australia. He needed that in order to marry Austrian native Marcus Moonman in the Netherlands. The Netherlands ultimately accepted an affidavit from Kokoschka as proof that he was single, and the couple was married in November. Kokoschka said he might take legal action against the Australian government for obstructing his legal marriage in the Netherlands. Australia passed legislation in 2004 that defines marriage exclusively as a union between a man and woman. A spokesman for Australia Attorney General Philip Ruddock claimed one purpose of the certificates is to verify that a proposed marriage would be valid in Australia. Nonsense, Australian National University senior law lecturer Wayne Morgan told The Age newspaper. There is nothing in Australian law that would prevent a certificate of no impediment to marriage being issued in such circumstances, he said. This is an internationally accepted document that has nothing to do with the validity of the marriage back in the couple's own country. Activist Rodney Croom of the Australian Coalition for Equality complained that the government has already made clear its opposition to same-sex marriage in Australia. Why does it now have to export that prejudice to other countries and Australians living overseas?
On the heels of the United Kingdom's new Civil Partnership Act, which grants registered same-gender couples the rights and obligations of marriage, England and Wales have extended adoption rights to unmarried hetero and queer couples. Adoption previously was limited to married heterosexual couples and single people. The change was passed by Parliament 3 years ago, but officially took effect on December 30th. Noted Felicity Collier, chief executive of the British Association for Adopting and Fostering, "This is very important at a time when too many children wait too long in temporary care waiting for an adoptive family, or, in some cases, never have the chance of adoption at all."
Two bills enhancing gay and lesbian couples' rights were overwhelmingly approved this week in the U.S. state of New Jersey. Legislation there is expected to be signed into law by Governor Richard Cody. One establishes same-gender couples' rights to inheritance and to make funeral arrangements, while the other would allow health benefits to be extended to the partners of lesbian and gay employees of county and municipal governments, school boards, and county colleges. Several New Jersey couples are nevertheless seeking full marriage equality. The state Supreme Court will hear oral arguments on their case in mid-February and could rule before the end of the year. The state of Washington's High Court is expected to rule at any time on a similar lawsuit, and New York's top tribunal may begin review of one or more marriage lawsuits later this year.
New Jersey Federal Appeals Court Judge Samuel Alito, nominated by George W. Bush to succeed moderate Sandra Day O'Connor on the U.S. Supreme Court, said this week that same-gender marriage issues are likely to come before federal courts in the coming years, but revealed little about how he would rule as a member of the nation's highest court. Alito told the Senate Judiciary Committee during his confirmation hearings that he expects federal challenges to the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act and expressed his belief that states are not required to recognize same-gender marriages performed in other states. In the queer-related case of Shore Regional High School v. PS, Alito explained his 2004 position in favor of a high school student who sought to change schools after being bullied with anti-gay epithets. He said that parents had the right to place their children in a safe school environment at government expense under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. Lara Schwartz, chief legislative counsel for the Human Rights Campaign, echoed the sentiments of a number of gay leaders, however, saying that Alito's ruling did not show support for gay rights. "I think the maximum it shows is he wouldn't go out of his way to produce a result that is contrary to the law," she said. Alito's nomination is opposed by a broad coalition of queer rights groups that also include the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force and Lambda Legal. The groups cite a 15-year history of hostility toward civil rights protections during Alito's time on the federal bench. Alito is expected to be confirmed along party lines later this month in the Republican-controlled Senate.
Courts in Poznan, Poland refused in late December and early January to begin criminal proceedings against 75 marchers who were arrested at a late November gay pride parade that had been banned by the mayor, according to a report by the Campaign Against Homophobia there. The marchers had been charged with taking part in an illegal gathering. A few hundred people joined the demonstration. They were harassed by members of the group All Polish Youth, who shouted, "Let's gas the fags and we'll do to you what Hitler did with Jews." Warsaw's Pride Parade was also banned by local officials in recent years. Then-Mayor Lech Kaczynski, who is now Poland's president, called last year's planned march sexually obscene. An improvised parade took place anyhow, with more than 2,500 defiant participants.
And finally, Brokeback Mountain, Ang Lee's critically acclaimed breakthrough film about the 20-year relationship of a ranch hand and a rodeo cowboy, may be lassoing a number of awards, but it received an O rating for morally offensive from the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, and moviegoers in the predominantly Mormon Salt Lake City, Utah suburb of Sandy won't be able to see it. It was supposed to open this week at the Megaplex at Jordan Commons, owned by Larry Miller, who also owns the National Basketball Association's Utah Jazz. Instead, it was abruptly pulled from the schedule with little explanation. The movie's distributor, Focus Features, said that theater management has reneged on their licensing agreement by refusing to open the film, but Gail Ruzicka, president of the conservative Utah Eagle Forum, said not showing the film tells the young people especially that maybe there is something wrong with this show. However, after some bad publicity, distributors in the Australian state of Queensland have decided to expand Brokeback Mountain screenings there from what had been planned as a limited release. Moviegoers in the northern cowboy country regions of Townsville and Rockhampton, one of the country's biggest beef and live cattle export centers, would have been forced to travel to other cities to see the film. There were claims that there would be little interest in that part of the country for a film like Brokeback Mountain, but as the local Townsville Bulletin newspaper editorialized, no one went to see Catwoman either. But that didn't stop them from screening it.
That's News Wrap for the week ending January 14th, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written this week by John Beaupre and Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm John Beaupre. This is Queer Voices.
With us is Nancy Ford, who has been with the Texas Triangle, then TXT Magazine, and now is
out... If you can read it, I wrote it.
Yes, yes. And now is taking a vacation, I guess an extended vacation.
And a fast vacation.
Well, and besides her publication experience, she's been a popular comic and singer-entertainer for years here in Houston.
I don't mind telling you, since 1981.
Yeah. And it seems like, you know...
AD.
And that stands for...
A dyke.
A dyke. Oh. And so here you suddenly are without employment.
She's in between.
She's between gigs.
Yes.
Let's call it self-employed. You know.
Oh, well, that's writing. What I call it.
I'm still writing. I'm still performing. I'm just not having to get up at a certain time and be at some one place. You should see me go crazy in my jammies in front of my computer at my home office, though.
Oh, can we put a webcam up and sell tickets?
I do have a webcam, actually, if things get the least bit bad.
What's that website?
Well, the important thing is...
www.haveyoulostyourmindnancyford.com.
The important thing is for the Houston public to realize that Nancy has not left us.
See, I am overwhelmed with the outpouring of fond wishes and everything. People say, are you all right? You know, because TXT News Magazine closed. It was going for a year. It bought out the Triangle. And after a year, it closed. And people are asking me, are you... It's so sweet. It is so sweet that people are so concerned. But yes, I am just fine. This is not like if, you know, I was 20 years old or something. I've got a little cushion, you know, and I'm not talking about my big butt. Everything will be fine, and I appreciate everyone's concern and continue their concern. I will be at the corner of Westheimer and Montrose this Friday with a bucket and some flowers. So if you'd like to contribute, I'll wash your windshield.
Well, so what else besides that gig do you have planned, Nancy Ford?
Well, I'm very excited to be starting doing my What a World columns every month here on Queer Voices on KPFT 90.1. It's nice to always stop in and see y'all and talk about whatever's going on and you know whatever we need to be talking about. But I'm thrilled to be starting with you on a regular basis, and thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. Just think of it as an audition.
Oh,
she's auditioning.
I recall Joan Crawford was asked to audition, too, after she was well into her career, but I won't be chopping down any cherry trees or trees tonight because of that.
Well, that's good to know.
I know. I'm rambling now.
That would be not environmentally correct.
It was a gay reference.
And don't speak badly of Joan Crawford, or we'll be hearing from Joan Crawford.
Oh, you'd never hear me speak poorly of Joan.
Not
this girl.
No. And so, why don't you give us a taste of... It is What a World, What a World.
What a
exactly.
World, What a World is a comedy column with a lesbian twist that I have been doing since the late 80s. Very fortunate that it's been published in many, many, many gay publications across the United States since that time, including...
J.D., do you have that song, The Lesbian Twist?
The Lesbian Twist. Did I write that one? People seem to really enjoy it, and I've done it over the years talking about... just whatever, you know, again, needs talking about in our gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community. And I'm very fortunate that people read it and continue to read it and find it funny most of the time. It's not always funny, but most of the time it's got a good guffaw in there, one or two. So, it's all good, Deborah. It's all good.
It's all good.
It's all good.
Okay, well, why don't you give us a little taste of your latest... insight into
all right.
Well,
I would be happy to. Thank you very much. Oh, I should probably tell you, What a World is based, I chose the title based on the last words uttered by the Wicked Witch of the West in The Wizard of Oz. What a world, what a world. How gay is that?
Pretty darn gay.
Okay, here we go.
I've got to go look at the movie now. Again.
Please do. It's the law. I was saddened to hear that Shelley Winters died last week. I loved her work. She was great as Ernest Borgnine's swimming wife in The Poseidon Adventure, the first one. But I especially loved her as Roseanne's cool grandmother, the mother of Bev, who, you'll remember, turned out to be a lesbian. Now, the fact that Shelley Winters played the cool mother of a lesbian on a TV show obviously doesn't say anything about her personal attitudes toward gay rights. I have no idea where she stood on our issues. I never met the woman. But I do have one Shelley Winters story that I would love to share with you. Years ago, a writer friend of mine got to interview Shelley Winters. She was in town promoting one of the books she'd written about her life in old Hollywood. My friend entered the hotel room that afternoon to find Shelley Winters reclining sprawled out full-blown Hollywood style on a chaise lounge. This was the early 80s, long after she had stopped relying on her figure to convey her sex appeal. So there Shelley was, spread out in flowing silks like a pasha eating bonbons or grapes or something round like that a screen legend would suck on while reclining on a chaise in flowing silks in a hotel room in the middle of the afternoon. Well, my friend began the interview, turning on her tape recorder, asking Shelley whatever, Shelley answering no doubt in that matter-of-fact way she was noted for. After all, this was a woman who wrote not one but three books about her life as a Hollywood starlet harlot. She was her own mommy dearest. She herself said about herself, "I have bursts of being a lady, but it doesn't last long." But Shelley Winters' showbiz romps is not what this story is about. While answering one particular question, Shelley leaned over toward my friend, shifting her reclining frame, presumably, for emphasis. But rather than accentuating her answer, Shelley allowed an audible to escape from the pillows supporting her ample, two Oscar-winning ass. Yes, Shelley Winters blew one. Burst of being a lady indeed. Well, it must have been grapes. Apparently, Shelley was plenty used to relieving herself of unnecessary discomfort. She was, after all, married and divorced three times. Offering no apology, she finished the interview with my stunned friend without missing a beat. Neither of them stopped to acknowledge the pfft that had infiltrated that hotel room that afternoon. Maybe it was a noise from the hallway, maybe it was a hiss from the AC vent, or maybe Shelley Winters had simply reached a point in her life where she recognized her priorities and was perfectly comfortable with them. We'll never know the real story for sure, but I choose to believe Shelley Winters blew one. I did, after all, get to hear the playback back of that interview again and again and again and again, rewound and replayed like Janet Jackson's Super Bowl nip reveal on TiVo. My writer friend has saved that tape for years as evidence whenever the opportunity presents itself for her to retell the story, and believe me, she does retell the story. It doesn't come up often. But every now and then, whenever I need a word to describe the natural passing of gas instead of using stinker or fart or even the more delicate fitta, which my mother pristinely insisted I use growing up, I now use the term Shelley, as in, who cut the Shelley? So, now you're waiting for some moral to this story, I know, some lesson to justify the outing of this legendary screen actress as a legendary fitta-blower only days after her death. Okay, here's what we can learn. Do not hold something in about yourself that is real and natural and, yes, God-given, just because it might offend others or embarrass them or make them feel uncomfortable. Whatever it is, let it out. Get it out of your system. Most of the time, you'll feel so much better. And it might even make a great story after you're gone. Because you know what? Bottom line, if other people don't like it, they can just leave the room or light a match. Rest in peace, Shelley Winters. What a world, what a world. This is Nancy Ford. Catch you next time on Queer Voices.
And what a world it is indeed. And we will be looking forward to hearing your take on things going on in the world and also any other gigs that you come up with that you want to let us know about and so that we can let the Queer Voices audience know. By the way, I just want to say, when we're talking about what a world, any of you that possibly can, go see Culture Clash at the Alley while they're there. I went last Thursday, met a lot of Queer Voices listeners, had a wonderful time, but these guys are awesome, and they say they do let it out. They do exactly as you advise, Nancy, and so I just want to give that a plug because they have a very important message and about what it means for all of us that we're all Americans and that how we need to get along with each other, and they do it so well, and it's so funny, and it's really good, and so you have that kind of voice, Nancy. You always bring us those kinds of messages.
Well, we could sort of flow right into the discussion of things going on. Breakfast on Pluto is playing locally, and it is an interesting movie.
Yeah, did that come from that probe coming back from Pluto or going to
No. It's just sort of a saying in the movie because it has to deal with a person who believes that he should be, he's growing up as a young boy, he believes he should be a female.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens around the time of the disturbances in Northern Ireland and England, and that all plays into it, and it's just a rather interesting movie. Accents are a little bit thick, and you have to sort of listen to it.
Men are from Mars, women are from Venus, and transgenders are from Pluto? Is that right?
No. We're from Earth, because we have our feet on the ground.
Oh, that's good, Jennifer.
But, Jennifer, you have a comment on the movie that's coming out this Friday.
Yeah, Transamerica opens this Friday at the Angelica. Hey, took me a week to learn how to pronounce it right, but I'd do it. We had an interview last week with Duncan Tucker, the writer-director, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. Hopefully tonight Felicia Huffman is up for a Golden Globe for Best Actress in her role in the movie. So let's keep our fingers crossed.
All right. Okay. So all of that is happening. Let's go to some music now.
If you go, you should know, it's hard to just forget the past so fast. It was good, it was bad, but it was real, and that's all we've got in the end.
This is J.D. I love bringing you music by new artists, and this is a good example. Blaine Bell, B-L-A-Y-N-E, Bell, has a new album called Overcome. That song is called Escape.
This is Queer Voices.
We're back in the year 2006. We've got a lot of things going on. One of the things coming up here on KPFT is we're going to be asking for money.
Starting in February.
Yes, it's always around. Sort of like the elections in Texas. There's another one always around the corner. So that'll be early February. So I think we either have two or three programs that will be doing that. Hopefully the third week they'll be out of it and it will be like one of the first programs outside the pledge. But that, of course, all depends on how people pledge.
But we still bring plenty of good entertainment, local news, and interviews.
Or else.
That's right.
Jennifer, you had something you wanted to talk about?
Well, one thing, the little snippet I said a moment ago about Transamerica. I do have here, they sent us some posters for Transamerica here, and I have them at the station. Some people can call in, leave me your name, you can leave them here. And for them, they can come by tomorrow and pick them up. Also, in April 15th, what a wonderful day, is the Houston Transgendered Unity Committee Banquet.
J.D. gave you a look when you said, what a wonderful day, April 15th.
I didn't even think about it.
No one likes Well, it was sort of that. It just turned up that way. It's a Saturday. The Unity Banquet's going to be held at the West Chase Hilton this year.
Used to be the Adams Mark, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And anybody interested, you can get your tickets at webtickets.com if you're interested.
And what exactly is the Unity Banquet?
Well, the Unity Banquet is put on by the Houston Transgendered Unity Committee to bring the different segments of the community together in one place to honor those people who have contributed the most to the community during this last year, as well as a fundraiser for the Scholarship Fund Foundation, providing school scholarships to those people who are deserving, who can't get a scholarship any other way. Transgenders are not exactly smiled upon when you go to try to get a grant to go to school.
What is the Unity Committee unifying?
We bring together the six different Unity transgendered committees in the city. Many years ago, this is the 14th annual one, by the way.
Wow.
Many years ago, they were working at cross purposes in the community, And so
I thought
the
they were cross-dressing, not
well, that was the question. We had the cross-dressers, then we had the the transgenders, then we had the transsexuals, and then of course we had the trans men who felt left out. All of them working at cross purposes, and so this was a way of bringing the community together to work together for a common cause, for the efforts that we needed in the community to work together on. And because of that, we've become the one voice for the transgender community, but also to bring the diversity, to bring part of the, the T and the GLBT.
And also to bring the G's and B's in with the T's.
Exactly, exactly. Because that's always fun. It gives us somebody to dance with now.
Right. Talking about unity and community and working for a common purpose, that's a good segue into Ellen Cohen is going to be running for State Representative District 134. She's kicking off her campaign this Thursday night, 6 to 8 p.m. at her campaign headquarters, 4950 Bissonnette, Suite 100, over in Bel Air. And you can go to www.ellencohen.org. I know that there's lots of other things going on that evening, but she's a wonderful candidate.
But also on Tuesday, if you're interested in voter registration and getting involved in politics, Tuesday, tomorrow afternoon, I think around 6, 6:30, they're going to be signing up people if you want to become a voter registrar in Harris County at the Community Center, which is 3400 Montrose. Harris doing that. I believe their number is 522-HERA, if I'm not correct, 713. So if you're interested in doing that, of course, you can always go down to the county headquarters and become a registered voter.
And the caucus is beginning its screening process of candidates this week, and so we should be hearing, who gets endorsed. March is when the endorsement
comes. Yes.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valinsky, Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, and Glenn Holt. And the rest of the Queer Voices crew.
I'm glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Last time on This Way Out.
Isn't it amazing what a person could do with a record collection and a good ear for innuendos? Find a song, a soundtrack, or a comedy album, and you'll be shocked at what you can come up with.
Keep it gay, keep it gay, keep it gay.
I'm not going with you.
Why, no?
You have to stay here with Barnaby. You're married to him.
The girl that I married.
How can you explain that, sir? None of these men seem. We haven't any history of them being homosexual.
Hey, wait a minute.
Men, 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 men.
Yay, love. With your heart I will play, love.
And now it's time for another special feature.
The legendary American DJ known as Dr. Demento raised audio kitsch to an art form. As Nurse Pimento, Southern California gay activist and radio producer David Fradkin added his own kind of spice in pursuing the peculiarities of popular culture. We got a nice dose of the late Fradkin's unique collection of music, film, and comedy recordings on last week's show. The practitioner makes a follow-up visit to conclude the early 80s presentation he called
Stranger Than Straight.
Come on, come on, wherever you are.
Here I am.
As I live and breathe. A fairy.
Thanks a lot, Jiminy. Hi there. Nurse Pimento at the duty desk once again, prescribing all kinds of forbidden fruit for your enjoyment.
Look at you. Look at me. Wish that we could always be so young and gay.
If you think the innuendos aren't clear, you are sadly mistaken. Many people are under the impression that the words we're familiar with today in the gay lingo are relatively new. Well, if they mean relative to the history of the world, they're right. But in regard to the 1930s and 40s, you'd better start taking the inferences at face value, because even then a fairy meant more than just a sprite. Did you ever wonder if Danny Kaye was a fairy? Especially after seeing him follow Bing Crosby around like a sick puppy in White Christmas. It should be on TV for the holidays, so look for it. Until then, be content with this little number. I have no date for it, but it's a heck of a lot older than White Christmas, which was made in 1954.
When all the birds have gone to sleep and all the frogs are still, then you will hear the fairy pipes come out upon the hill. Come out, listen on the air. Up there, down there, fairies everywhere. Oh, hark, oh, hear, can't you hear the tune? Fairy, fairy pipes underneath the silver moon.
But if you doubt that this can occur, and a question of what I spell, you'll never hear the melody.
The fairy pipers play. Come out, listen on the air. Up there, down there, fairies everywhere. Oh, happy fair here, can't you hear the tune? Fairy, fairy pipers underneath the silver moon. Come, man.
Anne Frank, the young woman who wrote the famous diary documenting her years in hiding from the Nazis, wasn't all the millions of readers made her out to be. She was more.
Wednesday, 5 January 1944. Dear Kitty, after I came here when I was just 14, I began to think about myself sooner than most girls and to know that I am a person. Sometimes, when I lie in bed at night, I have a terrible desire to feel my breasts and to listen to the quiet, rhythmic beat of my heart. I already had these kinds of feelings subconsciously before I came here, because I remember that once, when I slept with a girlfriend, I had a strong desire to kiss her, and that I did do so. I could not help being terribly inquisitive over her body, for she'd always kept it hidden from me. I asked her whether, as a proof of our friendship, we should feel one another's breasts, but she refused. I go into ecstasies every time I see the naked figure of a woman, such as Venus, for example. It strikes me as so wonderful and exquisite that I have difficulty in stopping the tears rolling down my cheeks. If only I had a girlfriend. Yours, Anne.
Today, straight people consider overt sexuality threatening. But in Noel Coward's time, it was considered chic.
I don't know, it's an extraordinary experience. I've said, well, everybody has that, I suppose. Something to do with the sun. I wouldn't understand myself, really. Quite for no reason, I'm here for the season and high as a kite, living in error with Maud and Katsura, which couldn't be right. You know, everyone's here frightfully gay. Nobody cares what people say. Now, though the Riviera is really much queerer than Roma tonight, on Wednesday night, I went to a marvelous party with Nunu and Nada and Mel. You know, it was in the fresh air, and we went as we were. We stayed as we were, which was hell. Poor Grace started singing at midnight. She didn't stop singing till 4. You know, we knew the excitement was bound to begin when Laura got blind on Dubonnet and gin and scratched her veneer with a Cartier pin. I couldn't have liked it more, honestly. I mean, it was marvelous party. We played the most wonderful game. Maureen disappeared and came back in a beard. And we all had to guess at her.
her name, imagine. Old Cecil, good old Cecil arrived wearing
armor, some shells, and a black feather ball. Poor Millicent wore a surrealist comb made of bits of mosaic from St. Peter's in Rome. But the weight was so great that she had to go home. I couldn't have liked it more, honestly. It's the most famous I've never seen to carry on. I mean, it couldn't happen anywhere else. Oh, you know, people's behavior away from Belgravia would make you aghast. So much variety watching societies cantering past. You know, if you have any mind at all, Gibbon's divine decline and fall sounds pretty flimsy. No more than a whimsy. By way of contrast, on Wednesday night, I went to a marvelous party. I must say, the fun was intense. We all had to do what the people we knew might be doing 100 years hence. Can you beat it? We talked about growing old gracefully, and Elsie, who's 74, said, A, it's a question of being sincere, and B, if you're subtle, you've nothing to fear. Then she swung upside down from a glass chandelier. I couldn't have liked it more. I'd been to a marvelous party. We didn't sit down to dinner till 10. You know, and young Bobby Carr did a stunt at the bar with a lot of extraordinary men. Paul Frieda arrived with a turtle, which shattered us all at the core. The Duchess passed out at 2:45, and suddenly Cyril cried, Fiddly Dee, and he ripped off his trousers and jumped in the sea. I couldn't have liked it more. I came to a marvelous party. Elise made an entrance with Meg. You'd never have guessed from her fisherman's vest that her bust had been whittled away. Poor Lulu got fried on Chianti and talked about esprit de corps. Louise made a couple of passes at Gus, and Freddy, who hates any kind of a fuss, did half of the Big Apple and twisted his truss. Ha ha! I couldn't have liked it more.
That isn't exactly the kind of music you could dance to.
Oh, I love dancing. I really do.
He didn't mean that.
Well, I didn't think that he did. Two grown men dancing. Heaven.
Wait, we're not partied out yet. The great jazz singer Bessie Smith used to go to parties at a very strange apartment. What did Bessie do up there?
Bessie had a party up there at this woman's house.
Bessie's niece, Ruby, talking with Chris Albertson.
Right near the jailhouse there in Detroit. Because when we come out side entrance, the prisoners would be hauling down, hey, girl, and we'd be hauling up at them and everything. I'll never get that place in Detroit. And Bessie, that's where the faggots used to dress like women there, and it wasn't against the law, you know. That was an open, real open house for everybody there in that town. And that's where I told you they had that party that time, and I went to it. Bessie and all of us went to the party, and all of us got so drunk there at that house, that some house that was a friend of Bessie, some woman had a house there, a buffet flat.
There's a lady in our neighborhood who runs a buffet flat. And when she gives a party, she knows just where she's at. She gives a dance last Friday night, and was to last till one.
What was a buffet flat?
A buffet flat is nothing but faggots and bulldaggers and open house. Everything goes on in that house.
But I mean, it was strictly a gay place.
A very gay.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
And it was strictly for faggots and
everything that was in the life. Everybody that's in the life.
Yeah. Why was it called a buffet flat?
A buffet means everything. Yeah. Everything goes on.
Mm-hmm.
They had a faggot there, and it was so great. And people used to come there just to watch him make love to another man. Mm. That's right, and he was real great. They'd give him a tongue bath and everything. Mm. And by the time he got to the front of that guy, he was shaking like a leaf, baby. And people used to pay good just to go in there and see him do his act. Now, we went into this room where this cat was giving this bit of this bath. Well, I tell you the truth, I was only young then. I was even much younger than I am now, you know. And I sat and watched that cat, and everybody in the room was excited. Honey, I've never seen anything like that in my life. He started from the cat's toes, and he went up from the back to the front. And by the time he got to the front of that cat, boy, I'm telling you, he was jeepers. And I felt like he'd been with him. And everybody in the room thought the same. That cat was great. I'm telling you, he was fine.
A real art.
Oh, he was. There ain't no job about that. He really was. In fact, in them days, they only had them working in there that could draw money. You see, they had to pay as they come in. You know the buffet flappers. They pay as they come in. You have to pay to go in. And they have shows, and every room is different. Two women going together, a man and a man going together. And anything that you want to see is in that place. And if you're interested, they do the same thing to you. You want to say, I wanted to get in with that cat. But he said it wasn't fish day, you know.
Okay.
So, so I was out.
There's a lady in our neighborhood who runs a buffet flat.
Feeling better now? I'm so glad. Oh, my, I've forgotten all about the time. My shift is over now, but I'm sure you're in good enough shape to take care of yourself. Remember, drink plenty of liquids and don't forget to take your vitamins. Oh, and we should thank the people who are the active ingredients in our miracle cure, Margaret Fowler and Joan Sprague, for their technical assistance. And the inert ingredients should get equal time, so I'd like to thank David Fradkin for just being me. This is Nurse Pimento. I'm just a kid again, do what I did again, singing my song. When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, John Beaupre, Christopher Gall, Rex Walkner, and Graham Underhill contributed program material. David Fradkin conjured more Stranger Than Straight, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep us on the air and choose from some very special queer history and culture CDs that you can own as our thanks. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KALW San Francisco, California, CKLU Sudbury, Ontario, WRPI Troy, New York, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. We're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Turn down the dial. I don't want another. Listening to something I've had enough of. It's all the same.
I was sitting in the foxhole, dodging all the shrapnel, waiting for my time to come. When along came a general with word from the capital, told me that I'd have to run. I asked, what's the problem? General said, son, I've heard you're a queer, so you better run along now. Didn't like you anyhow, get your butt out of here. Well, I've been doing a good job, my record compares to none. And it's okay if I kill a man, but I better not get caught loving one. And the moral of the story is to fight for love and glory, never mind it if you're straight or gay. I'm proud to be queer, that's the reason why I'm here, fighting for freedom in the USA.
Give us our own army. We could use a few good men and women to defend the lesbian gay. We'll fight for our freedom and demand a few amends. to the laws that take our rights away. Give us our own, give us our own, give us our own, 'cause we are here to stay. Give us our own, give us our own, give us our own, 'cause we are proud and gay. Give us our own lawyers, our own courts and our own land, our own schools and our own families. Give us our own cities and our own United States. We declare our sexual liberty. Give us our own, give us our own, give us our own, 'cause we are here to stay. Give us our own, give us our own, give us our own, 'cause we are proud and gay. Give us our own communion, matrimony's holy state, with benefits and health insurance plan. We'll take each other hand in hand, woman to woman and man to man. We are proud and gay Americans. Give us our own, give us our own, give us our own, 'cause we are here to stay. Give us our own, give us our own, give us our own, 'cause we are proud and gay. Give us our own, give us our own, give us our own, 'cause we are here to stay. Give us our own, give us our own, give us our own, 'cause we are proud and gay.
This is J.D., and that song is from the 90s, but it's still very timely, as you can see. It's by one of my favorite folk artists, Martin Swinger, and it's called Military Ditty.
This is Queer Voices.
This is Deborah Bell along with
Greg Chapman.
And we're talking with Army Specialist, or former Army Specialist, Tommy Cook, who was recently featured in an article by Craig LaSalle of the Houston Press about the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. And here Tommy is, suddenly the lead plaintiff in a case against the United States government challenging Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And Tommy, why don't you tell us a little bit about how this came to be?
Back in December, November time frame of 2003, I was on a training deployment to Fort Irwin, California. In Fort Irwin, we were on a team of three people. We lived in a truck for about 3 weeks. During the deployment there at Fort Irwin, California, I had a sergeant that was above me see an obviously gay soldier walk by and say that if he found out anybody on his team was gay, he would kill him. So instead of me risking my life and dying by another soldier instead of the enemy, I decided to go ahead and make my coming out statement in turn to save my life and maybe save other people's lives in the same process.
So just at that moment you said, well, I'm gay, or how did you handle it?
At the moment, I just kept my mouth shut because I wasn't really sure what he would do, so I just stayed quiet. And I waited till we got back to Fort Hood before I had said something to my command.
So you didn't say it to the sergeant?
No.
And what happened when you told your commanding officer?
When I told my commanding officer, he did what every other commanding officer probably would have done and followed regulation and started my discharge paperwork. And in that process, I had his superior tell me that he wasn't going to give me a general discharge because he said I was avoiding going to a war in Iraq.
And that kind of is not exactly correct, because you already had served in Kuwait.
Not at all. Not correct at all. He had no clue that I had volunteered the year prior to serve 8 months in Kuwait with Operation Enduring Freedom from Afghanistan. So it was definitely something that was a false pretense that he had that he wanted to give me a general discharge for.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to say it this way. You're only 23 years old. When you went into the service, you knew before you went in that you were gay?
No, not at the time. I wasn't sure that I was gay at the time. I was still trying to figure out who I was, and that was part of my quest was to join the service.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people that age don't really know who they are. I mean, I just turned 56.
I definitely agree.
And I'm still trying to figure it all out. So you had some questions about your sexual orientation, but what led you to a career in the military?
Military is a family background. Many people of my family are in the military. I've decided that I wanted to join the military to serve my country. That's basically the only reason why I went in, is because, you know, I think it's every American's duty to serve the country, and I believe that everybody should at least serve in some stance. If it's behind a soldier, backing them up the whole time, or if it's, you know, joining the service themselves. And I was one of those that wanted to be on the front lines and join the service myself.
What did you actually do in the Army?
I was ground surveillance intelligence, which basically means that I would go out and do intelligence recon.
And probably you could tell us what that meant, but then you'd have to kill us?
Pretty much.
Well, I was just going to say, it sounds like pretty important work.
It definitely is an important job. There's not that many in the military, and my MOS, or my job, was an all-male field, so there was no females allowed.
So you came out, you were processed, you were honorably discharged?
Yes, I was honorably discharged after, with the help of SLDN, Service Members Legal Defense Network. I had them help me out, and I fought my battalion commander and got my general recommendation raised to an honorable and got my honorable discharge.
So how did you go from there to filing this lawsuit against the U.S. government?
SLDN was looking to find 12 amazing people to put together for a lawsuit, and they slowly handpicked and went through everybody's background and files, and they come up with the 12 of us. They basically just called me up one day and wanted to know if I'd be willing to be in a lawsuit against Donald Rumsfeld, and I said, yeah, of
sure,
course. Why not?
I'd love to. No, you didn't have any question that was something that was the right thing to do, or that...
Oh, I never second guessed myself on that decision. That was something that I wanted to do. As soon as I heard the option, I wanted to be in it. I wanted to be some part of it. I wanted to help to do away with the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, lift it and make a policy to where there's non-discrimination at all in the military. There should be no discrimination. It never, ever hurt my job whatsoever, and it should never hurt my career.
Do you think you would have continued with the military career had you not been discharged?
Definitely. I definitely would have continued with the military career. I was already looking into switching jobs and going into the medical field. So,
and it was 1 month before you were due to be deployed to Iraq.
Yes, I got discharged January 22nd of 2004. My unit left on January 12th of 2004.
The fact that you were a specialist in a field where they don't have very many people is kind of a crucial point to this whole issue because, and I'm going to quote from the article that was in the Houston Press, the current suit known as Cook v. Rumsfeld is the latest in a renewed efforts by gay advocacy groups and state and federal legislatures to get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Citing low recruitment numbers and the loss of highly specialized service members, these opponents say DADT is just plain idiotic in a time of war. Plus, they say there's that whole liberty thing, too. So the very thing, you know, you felt like you were fighting for the liberty of the country, but it comes on a more personal level this way, to say the liberty of yourself for, based on your sexual orientation and other gays and lesbians that are serving.
Well, according to reports, there's approximately 60,000 gays and lesbians serving quietly in the military right now. And those people are the bravest people in the world to deal with this policy and let this policy slide. They're just courageous. It was really, really hard for the 2 years, 9 months, 11 days that I was in to change your stories and to change them to where you weren't talking about your boyfriend, you were talking about your girlfriend. And that kind of stuff gets really, really hard. And I really, really commend those people. But for us to be fighting over there and to me have a specialty like this, it's more of a waste of the government's money and the taxpayers' money to discharge somebody for their sexual orientation.
You also wonder if someone dies, someone gets killed, one of our soldiers, because someone like you isn't over there doing the job that they can do.
Exactly. I mean, I've had too many friends that were close by that had lost their lives, and I felt like if I was there, that there was something that I might have approached the situation a little bit different, and it could have spared their lives.
Well, what some people have said is that homosexuality is incompatible with military service, and yet there are so many gays and lesbians that have not only served but served with distinction. Greta Kammermeier is an example, and another outspoken advocate said, you said that 12 people are involved in the lawsuit, but it's Cook v. Rumsfeld. That means you're the lead plaintiff.
Yeah, when I first agreed to it, all I could really think after I said yes and hung up the phone was, my mom's going to kill me. So, you know, it's not every day that you can take on Donald Rumsfeld and, you know, try to do away with the policy. And I am very, very proud that it's my name against Donald Rumsfeld.
Well, we have on the phone Kathy Westcott, who's with the Service Members Legal Defense Network. Kathy, do you have any comments?
Thank you so much for having me on the phone tonight. And I think all I have to do is tip my hat to Tommy. You've done a great job so far, Tommy, explaining why we wanted to do what we're doing currently. I mean, Tommy is a great example of the 11 other plaintiffs that are in our lawsuit. We selected 12 people who some had served a few years, some had served almost 15 years, all of whom served their country honorably and had been very highly trained, well trained, and done very good jobs while they were in the service, because we wanted to make sure that people understood, as we put Don't Ask, Don't Tell on trial, because that's the goal here, we wanted to make sure that people understood that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is not just, you know, a law in name, it's a law in practice, and it's a law that is harmful to the United States military, and it's a law that's harmful to the country as a whole.
And one problem with it is someone doesn't actually have to be homosexual, not that that should matter, but that if someone is suspected, it can start the investigation, it can, you know, open them to scrutiny, and some people base their observations on what they might consider possibility of homosexuality on some pretty flimsy information.
Yeah, it's I've been an attorney with Service Members Legal Defense Network for 7 years, and during that time I have seen, not to sound too dramatic, but I've seen, I think, some of the best in humanity and some of the worst in humanity, and some of the worst, I mean, it really has come down to just because, for example, a woman turns down a sexual advance of a supervisor, the easiest thing he can throw out is, well, then you're a lesbian.
Yeah, that's classic in sexual harassment cases.
Right, and I'm going to report you to the military. And what that means is, unlike in the private sector in sexual harassment cases, in the military, what it means when someone accuses you of being a lesbian, there's a process that starts, and the law is very explicit that says if you have engaged in what they consider to be homosexual conduct, which can be very little, you shall be separated from the service. In other words, you lose your job.
Just from being accused.
Yes, I mean, it doesn't
have to be proven.
Well, the difficulty is that the law says that if you have engaged in homosexual conduct, which can be something, and it has been interpreted this way, something as simple as having your arm around someone of the same sex, holding hands with someone of the same sex, dancing closely with someone of the same sex, that could be considered homosexual conduct. And as such, you have to prove then that you don't have a propensity to engage in homosexual conduct in the future. And so that probably sounds pretty circular, and it is indeed very circular. It's very hard to prove a negative. How do you prove I'm not gay when you saw me holding hands with my cousin who happens to be a girl?
It's almost like you're guilty until proven innocent.
It absolutely is. We, just in the day-to-day practice of our job, we don't win very many cases during the year because it is so very hard to prove that, you know, when you're walking down the street and you look at somebody, you know, they don't have on their forehead their sexual orientation. So how do you prove what your sexual orientation is? You have maybe ex-boyfriends, ex-girlfriends come and testify for you. But if, you know, the board on that particular day, the group of officers and enlisted members that have to make the decision about whether or not you stay in, if on a particular day they don't happen to believe those statements, you know, how do you prove I'm not that sexual orientation or I am that sexual orientation? It's so incredibly difficult.
And the real point is that the sexual orientation shouldn't make a difference.
That's absolutely the real point.
Are there cases where there are people that are, I guess you'd say, out in kind of a closeted way, like within their unit, and where there has not been issues?
Sure. I think that we hear stories all the time where people are serving openly amongst their group of friends or openly amongst their unit, and it does not cause any harm to unit cohesion and discipline, the things that you hear the military incite all the time in defense of don't ask, don't tell. I mean, we also very clearly, you know, 24, 25, I think, other countries in the world, many of whom are serving side by side with U.S. military in both Afghanistan and Iraq, do not have bans on gays and lesbians serving in the military.
Say that again. We're like, the United States is one of the few countries that does have a ban, or the only country?
We're not the only country, but we're one of a very few countries that have organized militaries that still has a ban on gays and lesbians serving openly. Most other, shall we call them the industrialized countries, most other industrialized countries lifted their bans, you know, during the 90s, if not before then. Israel has not had a ban since the mid-80s. Canada lifted theirs in 92-93. Britain lifted theirs in 1999. And there's actually been studies, social science research studies, about the countries that have lifted their bans on lesbian and gays serving openly in the, you know, the last 10 or 15 years. And all of those studies have said, you know, despite the uproar prior to the lifting of the ban, that, you know, people would leave the military in droves and no one would sign up again if gays could serve openly, that was never the case, and there was never a big deal to it once it finally happened.
It's interesting you mentioned Great Britain, since we're fighting side by side over in Iraq and Afghanistan. It seems like if that was such a big issue for us, then why don't we have problems fighting with an army that's essentially integrated?
Absolutely. And in some cases, our units are integrated with their units. I mean, we not only do we serve in hostile areas with these countries, but we've also been training in integrated units for years. I mean, we have exchange programs where our sailors go on to their ships and their sailors go on to our ships, and they have openly gay sailors, you know, coming to work on our ships and our sailors go and onto ships that have openly gay sailors, and there's not the problems that the military keeps, the U.S. military keeps saying we would see. It just does not happen in practice.
And in the meantime, we're losing the skills and knowledge of so many people that have specialized training and abilities that may really be costing us.
Absolutely. I mean, since Don't Ask, Don't Tell was passed and became law in 93, we've lost over 10,000 skilled, many highly skilled and trained members of our military, from Arabic linguists to helicopter pilots to medics, and it's solely because of sexual orientation, perceived sexual orientation. It never comes down to their ability to do the job.
Wow.
You also kind of wonder if how much of a security risk that kind of a policy is. I mean, you have all these people serving in the Army who have to keep their sexual orientation a secret, and it seems like that could subject them to blackmail.
And remember, it was a gay man that broke the code in World War II that allowed us to, you know, was a big part of us winning, although I contend that no one wins a war.
You're talking about Alan Turing, and he broke the,
exactly,
the Nazi code.
Thank you, Glenn. Kathy, this is not the first lawsuit that's been filed against Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and it's being filed in the Boston District Court, but it's the first lawsuit against the policy since the Lawrence decision of 2003, which, of course, that came out of Texas, as did Roe v. Wade. So, you know, like, yay, these things from Texas. So maybe that's a good sign. The Lawrence decision, of course, was the one that overturned the homosexual conduct law here in Texas. Is it going to be a basis as part of the argument, do you think?
Yes. I mean, what occurred after the Lawrence decision from the Supreme Court is we really saw it as an opportunity to try again to show that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is unconstitutional. In the mid-90s, there were several cases filed in the federal courts on the constitutionality of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It never went to the Supreme Court, but there were several cases in the federal courts, and unfortunately, because of Bowers versus Hardwick, which was the case before Lawrence versus Texas.
Right, that was out of Georgia.
Right, in the 80s. Because of Bowers, many of the decisions in the early Don't Ask, Don't Tell cases were that Don't Ask, Don't Tell was constitutional, because Bowers, the Supreme Court found in Bowers that laws against homosexual conduct and homosexual sexual acts were okay under the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. When will this case be heard?
That's a very good question.
We don't know, huh?
Well, we filed last year,
December 6th.
Yeah, December.
Tommy's up on these dates, I'm
December
telling you.
December 6th, 2004.
I think he remembers it like it was yesterday.
I do.
yes, we filed in December of 2004. Once we filed, the government's response was to file a motion to dismiss the case, basically saying we didn't have, you know, enough evidence to show that Don't Ask, Don't Tell was unconstitutional. And we filed some papers, and they filed some more papers, and then the court, the judge, heard oral arguments over the summertime. And right now we're just waiting on his decision on whether or not the case should move forward. And we do feel pretty confident that because of the court rules that we have provided enough information in our complaint to show that we should move on in the case towards trial.
Is there anything happening legislatively?
Yes, there is. At the same time that we were doing work on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Capitol Hill, on the House side, there was a bill introduced called the Military Readiness Enhancement Act, H.R. 1059. It was sponsored by Representative Meehan, coincidentally, who is also out of the state of Massachusetts. And just to backtrack a little bit, we filed in Massachusetts because one of our plaintiffs actually physically lives in Massachusetts, and the First Circuit had never heard a Don't Ask, Don't Tell case before, which is where the Massachusetts court is.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to legislation, the Military Readiness Enhancement Act was filed, was introduced in the House of Representatives last year. It has currently more than 100 co-sponsors, both Democrat and Republican.
Including our own Sheila Jackson Lee.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yes, she's definitely been a great proponent up on the Hill with respect to this issue, and really appreciate her support. And we're hoping that a companion to H.R. 1059 will be introduced in the Senate this year, and that's currently what my organization is working towards, along with a group of, you know, other coalition partners and some really good folks up on the Hill who believe that it is time to change the law.
Do you have a likely sponsor for that?
We're talking with several different offices on both sides of the aisle. The goal is to have an introduction with a Republican and Democrat co-sponsorship. That will be the goal for introduction.
Yeah, I'd like to see McCain do that.
Wouldn't that be great? Yes.
Well, Kathy, thank you so much for your insight, especially on the legal issues. And I just want to get back to Tommy a minute, because the message really, when the don't ask, don't tell, and I was in Washington during 92 and early 93, and when Clinton, you know, when this first came out, and it seemed the intent was to make a better policy, but it seems like it made a worse policy. But the message is still, if you're going to be in the military, don't be gay. And if you are gay, then, you know, what are you left with? Tommy, now, what are you doing?
Right now, I am currently going to nursing school and trying to get my RN, just waiting time until we win this lawsuit, and I get to go back in and I get to serve openly.
Oh, so you do plan to return to the military?
Yes, every single one of us do.
Oh, that is wonderful. I mean, that's, you know, that's quite a statement, that all 12 of the defendants want to return to the military.
Definitely. That's something that is in our lawsuit, that we will return if the circumstances permit us to. But I will definitely be happy to be the first one in line at the recruiting station the day that this lawsuit is announced and we win.
Well, thank you so much for being with us on Queer Voices. Thank you, Kathy. And Tommy, you signed up right out of graduating from Angleton High School because you wanted to serve your country and do your American duty. And what was that date?
That date was April 11th, 2001. It was before September 11th, so I had no clue that was coming. But I was an American, too, and I wanted to serve, so that's what I did. That on April 11th, 2004, I raised my right hand and said the oath that every other military person says when they enter.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for being with us here on Queer Voices, and good luck with the lawsuit. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
I have faced every enemy. I ain't scared of no Iraqi missiles. I ain't scared of no Russian tanks. If I'm captured and tortured, all they'll get is my serial number, name and rank. You know I'd storm Baghdad to kick Saddam's butt, swim to Havana, bring home Castro's beard, for my buddies throw my body on a live grenade. I guess I just don't know the meaning of fear, but please, 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 don't make me
canary, not a fairy. Fairies scare me, 'cause a fairy might look at my wee wee. My wee wee, it's so teeny.
Another fun gay military song, this time even by a straight artist. Fred Small has been a friend of our community a long time. In fact, he wrote the almost anthem Everything's Possible. But that song by Fred was called Marine's Lament. Coming up next, another chance for me to plug QMH, Queer Music Heritage, next week, because in the second half of next week's show, I'm interviewing Levi Christ, and it's a wonderful interview. And he's a wonderful artist. Coming up is a song from his new album, One of the Ones. The song is called Love in Another Light.
Turn down the dial, I don't want another. Listening to something I've had enough of. It's all the same, a big misconception. Thinking I'd find what I was looking for. Love is not just a fix anymore. Man needs to feel something more. So maybe it's time that I tear down the walls, open my eyes. I wanna know love in another life. There's gotta be more to this life. Let me know love in another life. Oh. Too many nights I fed from the ruin of manic pursuits that left nothing to gain. In desolate bars, drowning in whiskey, back rooms with boys that don't have a name. At some point we all want the same, to live and let go of the pain. So maybe it's time that I tear down the walls, open my eyes. I wanna
And we're back. This is J.D. One of the big news in gay music circles last week was the opening or the debut of a nationally syndicated, quote-unquote, gay music show called Music with a Twist. Sony Music Entertainment is the driving force behind this. The producer is the same guy who brought Logo to cable. I heard the first debut show, which was Saturday night. It airs in a lot of cities, about 9 or 10 right now. In Houston, it aired on the 10 to midnight slot. That's a good slot.
And on what station?
It was on Mix 96, 96.5, I believe.
My alma mater.
Well, okay.
Yes.
There we go. My assessment of it, it was a little light on an actual gay music, I kept track. I was keeping notes. There were 14,
sure you were
14 songs played. Four were by gay artists, and all of the gay artists were the biggies. You know, Melissa Etheridge, Elton John, George Michael. If you count Rem, I sort of counted them because Michael Stipe is the lead singer of that. The rest of them were people like Green Day, Madonna, Cher, Kelly Clarkson, da-da-da. Yeah, who cares? You know, I didn't write the titles down. I didn't care.
Would those all be Sony artists?
I wondered about that, but I didn't have the energy to search that. The hosts, the three hosts, are very good. It's, remember, this is like a top 40 format.
Right.
So it's supposed to be sort of formula-like.
Okay, so they're not really like doing like we do with interviews and stuff.
No, well,
so much.
Not
they're
really.
They're introducing
the songs. They have a couple other segments that are pretty nice. They did a quick interview with Margaret Cho, and they had a call in for long distance dedications. It's nice to hear a man to man or a female to female dedication on national radio. That's all positive. The hosts are very good. Marsha Carlton, is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
And Will Wilkie and Dennis Hensley, who's a friend of mine, did a very good job. They're very up, very lively, very funny.
I hear they've invited you to participate.
They feature a show, a city every week. Last week was Atlanta, and they had three local people from Atlanta talk about gay Atlanta. They're going to do Houston next week, and I've been asked to be one of those people. Nancy Ford's going to be another one. So we're organizing that for the show next Saturday. That'll air. It's a good show. I naturally have my bias. I wish there were a lot more gay artists. Hopefully they'll be able to work that in. You know, they got to catch the audience first.
Right. And if not, you listen to them on Queer Voices.
Right.
That's right. MusicHeritage.com. And
a couple things coming up this week. Tomorrow at the community center, I believe it's around 6:30. They are registering people if you want to become a voter registrar in Harris County.
And explain what that means.
That means you can register voters, that you can actually go out there and sign them up, and
you can recruit.
Yes.
Yay.
And that's being done by HERA, the Houston Equal Rights.
And that's useful because you get their age as you do it, so you know that they're legal.
Our old friend Don Rockaby used to do that and keep extensive notes on his cards as to which ones were cute.
And I
we're
using
a different agenda, are we?
Yeah, that was a little bit.
I inherited Don's list. so that, and then on, what else we got? On Thursday, Pride's having an open house at 1415 California First Floor. That's also a recruitment for volunteers. And then on Saturday, the community center is doing their bingo at 1415 up in the club on the second floor.
Remember, that's drag queen bingo.
Drag queen.
How could you ask for more?
Yeah. The best of all worlds. And there's a buy-in for that, but you get prizes. So, and it goes to a wonderful
cause.
It's
legal gambling.
Yeah.
Yes.
How about that?
Well, you know.
And, of course, every Sunday morning at the First Unitarian Universalist Church is the women's group, which starts at 10:45 and is a great group for women to attend, to meet other like-minded people and to connect with community.
Well, we'd like to thank our guest tonight, Tim Brookover from Outsmart, and he's also part of the community center. Nancy Ford doing her debut of What a World. Queer Voices, and
Army Specialist Tommy Cook and Kathy Westcott of the Service Members Legal Network. So much good wishes to them and their effort in the lawsuit, hopefully to overturn Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
And Queer Music Heritage.
And again, next week, Queer Music Heritage, the main interview with Levi Christ, but lots of old songs in the first part of the show you do want to hear.
Thanks for being with us on Queer Voices.
Thank you. Good night.
Been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 7 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, and Jack Valensky, with remote correspondents Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C.
For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned in the show, visit queervoices.org. Some of the music you heard is listed or available on J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.org. Be sure to listen every Saturday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
The award-winning Fort Bend Theater, a nonprofit organization, will be presenting the popular Broadway musical Oliver at the 1,100-seat state-of-the-art Stafford Performing Arts Center, located at 10505 Cash Road, February 24th and 25th at 8 p.m. and February 26th at 3 p.m. For ticket information, call 281-208-3333. Based on Charles Dickens' classic novel, Oliver chronicles the journey of Oliver Twist as he travels from a pitiful orphanage to the exciting streets of London. Come see and hear for yourself why this colorful, entertaining musical won the Tony Award for Best Composer and Lyricist. You may charge your tickets by phone by calling Fort Bend Theater, Fort Bend's forerunner in theatrical entertainment and education, at 281-208-3333, or visit their website at www.fortbendtheater.net. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
Have you ever wanted to discover what KPFT is like during its most energetic moments? Now is your chance. Starting February 1st, KPFT kicks off its Winter Pledge Drive, and we need your help to make it a success. You can put your spare time to use this February by volunteering to answer phones during the drive. Our phone volunteer trainings are Wednesday, January 25th at 6 p.m. and Saturday, January 28th at 10 a.m. The sessions will be held at KPFT Studios, 419 Lovett Boulevard. You'll meet KPFT listeners just like you, make new friends, and help this community radio station. In just an hour or two, you can help us handle pledges. Your efforts make a difference and can make this a fun and successful drive. Evenings and weekends are available. Again, those phone volunteer training dates are Wednesday, January 25th at 6 p.m. and Saturday, January 28th at 10 a.m. They'll be held at KPFT Studios, 419 Lovett Boulevard, near downtown Houston. Visit kpft.org to RSVP for the training or to get more information. You're tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.